My name is Deborah Vilches. I'm 52 years old, and today is December 3rd, 2017. And I'm speaking with Seymour Fleischman, who is my dad. And we're recording this interview in Lincolnwood, Illinois. So, Dad, I've always wondered this. Do you think we're alike in any ways? And in what ways do you think we're alike or not alike?
Well, I think we're alike in many ways. First of all, you've got a good sense of humor. And you're smart. You've got a great personality. And not that I'm bragging, but I've been told that by several people. And I'm just like you are. I mean, it's almost, you know, like there's nothing else I can say except that we're very, very similar.
Wow. Thanks, Dad. It's a great compliment. So in your life, who do you think influenced you the most? Who was the most influential person?
Well, you're going to be surprised when you hear my answer, because I'm going to have to say that it's my brother, Ira. That's my middle brother. He's 4 years younger than me. But the reason I say that is because he set a good example for me. My brother is very bright. My brother turned out to be a dentist. Beside that, and by the way, he's very successful and gets a lot of referrals, because all the patients who go to him like him probably just as much as I do. The fact that my brother has got, I love him like a brother, let's put it that way, but he is very, very good-natured. He's very generous. He'll do anything for you. He's got a great heart. And that's the influence that he has on my life, because I strive to be like him. And in some ways, I have succeeded.
I wonder if he strives to be like you. You never know.
That's possible.
So is there anything that you've just always wanted to tell me and you never did?
Well, I never kept any secrets from anybody, especially, you know, my kids. I don't think that I could really answer that question. The only thing I might add to the conversation is, I don't know why, because it's not like me, but I always regretted not saying to all of my children that I love you. But as I got older, I realized that I really did love them, and that more than they realized, and I wanted to express my feelings before, God forbid, anything would happen.
So, well, we knew it. You don't have to say it. We knew it.
Well, I understand, but there's nothing like it coming right from the person.
That's true. So what do you think is the happiest moment? I know you've had a long, long life, so what would you say is one of the happiest moments of your life?
Well, I think the happiest moment of my life is when I met your mom. And I have many reasons for feeling that way. First of all, she's a little cutie. And I knew her before, because she went to school with my brother, and she used to come over for homework. So I sort of, you know, I was never formally introduced, but I sort of was familiar, you know, with her. She is a wonderful, wonderful wife. She's a wonderful mother. She's got a wonderful nature. She is just the best thing that I could have done in my life was to marry my wife.
Wow. So what would you say that you're most proud of?
I am very proud of the fact that my kids all turned out to be wonderful children, all very bright, always successful in life in any of their endeavors. And they're happy kids. And that made me very happy that they were, I always had the feeling that they were satisfied with their life, living with their mother and father. And that pleased me more than anything.
You're right, we did. We did have it pretty good, no complaints. So I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about, on a totally different subject, just, I know you served in Korea, and it was a long, long time ago, but how do you think your experience in Korea molded you as a person?
It did what it was supposed to do. It was to teach you discipline. And I had no problems at all adjusting to that. And I was given 5 promotions while I was there. I had no stripes at all on my sleeve, and I went from nothing to what they call a sergeant first class. That was right below the next highest non-commissioned rank, which would have been a master sergeant. And I got along with everybody, and I was given a lot of responsibility. I was in charge of many, many people. I was in Division Signal Supply Section, and I was asked to take charge of all of the workers that were there in their jobs. I was in charge of them as the one with the probably that was most qualified. At least that's the way, you know, my commanding officers felt. Prior to my being asked, I was told this, that out of all the people that we could have asked, we picked you because we think that you're the most qualified and the most likely, you know, to succeed because of the way you are with people, and I think that you'll be treating your workers in a very fair way, and that's what you ended up doing. And you were successful, and you helped us out a lot with your talent.
Wow. That's something to be proud of, but still the proudest moment is Mom.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I should have said that first. But that's, you couldn't have spoken anything but the truth when you made that statement.
Okay. So going on to a different subject, you worked, one of the things that when I asked you if we had something in common, I was kind of thinking about our jobs and our work ethic a little bit, because I know that you worked at Parts and Electric Motors for the same place, the same company for 50 years, and it was obvious that you didn't love it. You came home sometimes and talked about tough days and your boss and all of that, but how did you manage to stay there for so long, and even though you didn't love your job, what motivated you to keep going to work?
Well, actually, I loved my job because it was inside behind the desk doing paperwork, and that's why I really liked what I was doing. That's my specialty. I like detail and writing letters, which I used to dictate to a secretary that we had. And the reason that I stayed there so long and worked there so long was because, as I said before, I loved what I was doing. And in the beginning of my employment, we just repaired electric motors. And then my boss decided to add to the business. So we moved into a different location, but stayed in the same location with the original work. And he needed somebody to be in charge of the new type of work that we were going to get into, which was selling the electric motors and selling parts. So we call ourselves Parts and Electric Motors. And I really loved it because it was challenging. And I was very, very, very much interested in what I was doing. I stayed there many hours. I worked Saturdays. I took work home with me. I worked Sundays. All my life, no matter where I've been employed, I've always given my best. And I've always thought that I'm getting paid to do a job and I'm going to do it. And if I really, really take a great interest, I will impress my superiors. And monetarily, I succeeded. And I couldn't have chosen a better type of a job for the rest of my life. I was happy there, but there was times when I wasn't, because we happened to have some very I won't say low class, but we didn't have any very intelligent people working there, and I had some problems handling them. And then my boss, we were very close, and as he got older, he began to have some dementia, and he did things like yell and this, that, and the other. But I never once criticized him or sassed him back. I just accepted it. And finally, I retired because I got sick, and I just felt that if I stayed, that because I was going for treatments for about a month and a half, which meant I couldn't go to work, and I knew I would still get paid because that's the kind of a boss he was like. He would pay me. And I felt that I would be not earning the salary because I wasn't there to perform in any way. So I retired, and I was happy to retire, because when I retired, you know, I wasn't subjected to the responsibility and the routine and so on and so forth. So even in my retirement, I was happy. So that's my story.
Well, I definitely got that from you, because I've been at the same company, you know, for almost 20 years now.
And right.
I know a lot of people jump around jobs, and I always think back to how you stayed at one place for a long time, and I saw you working hard all the time. So I want you to know that I got that from you.
Okay. Well, I have one other thing to say. I always felt that if you just stay in one place, if you like it and you see that you're getting somewhere, stick it out. Don't keep running for a quarter an hour raise here and a $10 a week of raise there. It didn't make sense to me. Just hang in there, and you'll probably benefit a lot more than you wouldn't have had you jump from job to job. The money didn't interest me. It was making an impression and doing the job and performing the way an employee should perform in any job that they have.
So you talked a lot about mom in the beginning. Tell me a little bit more. You guys have been married now for 60 years. What first attracted you to mom? You know, what do you most love about her?
Well, I knew that she was a good person right off the bat, and I could tell very easily, because when I met her, I knew her prior, but not very much, because she's younger than me, and we didn't go to school together or anything. But my brother and her were in the same class, and so I knew her a little bit. But what really attracted me to her is the fact that one of the important things to me was that her attitude was family is first. And I knew right then and there, you know, that she was a good person and that she would make a wonderful wife. Of course, I fell in love with her for those reasons. Things worked out just terrifically, and I'm very, very happy that I was her choice, or she was my choice, I beg your pardon. And I've been married to her for 61 years because I've been treated properly and I've been respected. And she's just a wonderful person, just in general. There's everybody loves her.
Do you remember anything about the day that I was born?
Yes, I do. Either way, the fact that we already had a daughter, and then we had a son, and then we had another daughter, and I felt good about that because I knew that there would be some sort of a closeness and companionship between the two. Not that my son wasn't included in that, but you know, two women have a lot in common, and I knew that would work out in their life, and they would be close to one another and love each other and get along together, and it worked out perfectly. Unfortunately, we didn't have another child, but my son wasn't alone. He was with his two sisters, and for the most part, you know how kids are, especially if you're the only boy. But my son is just like my kids. They're my two daughters. They're just wonderful, wonderful person, and they still remain to be that way. I love them like you wouldn't believe.
Well, you're right about me and my older sister, Eileen, because we had our moments growing up, but we're very, very close now. I consider her my best friend.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad you feel that way.
So I just asked you if you remember the day I was born, but that certainly wasn't your... I'm always curious, I always try to think back in my head, what's the earliest thing I can remember in my life? And I go back to something when I was like 3 years old. What's your earliest memory?
My earliest memory is something that happened that was typical, you know, of the way I ended up. I was very young at the time. We lived on the northwest side of Chicago. We lived in an apartment, and we had a pantry. In those days, you had such things. And I saw something in the pantry that I thought was called a chocolate cake, and I never had tasted it. And I decided to give it a try. Well, it turned out that I finished the whole thing. And of course, my mother wasn't around or wasn't in the same room, but she was, you know, in the apartment with me. And when I came out, she thought maybe that I developed some sort of a sickness because the cake was just all over me. Eyes, ears, nose. I remember my mother's reaction, and she was very, very thrilled with the fact that I wasn't sick, because the way I looked, she thought I was. And that's what I remember most.
How about, were you a baby? Like, how old?
I was probably about, I'd say about 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old, something like that.
You still like chocolate cake?
Oh, I love it. I love it.
So who were some of your...
My weight will prove it.
So who were some of your closest friends growing up?
All right, my closest friends growing up, I should say, were my classmates in grammar school. Because I went all through grammar school with about 6 different guys that lived in the same apartment building that I lived in. So we were very close. We did everything together. We played baseball. We played marbles. We played ping pong. We talked. We all loved sports. We had a lot in common. And everybody was good to each other and kind. And you couldn't ask for anything better than that as you were growing up.
So you mentioned some of the things that you did, you know, ping pong and marbles and that. What were some of the other things that you did for fun?
Well, the only other thing that I did for fun was what I really enjoyed. I learned how to play pool. And we had a local pool room on Lawrence and Ridgeway in Albany Park, where I grew up. And, you know, like I mentioned before, when I set my mind to do something, I do it wholeheartedly and concentrate and put time in, and I turned out to be a pretty good pool player. We used to play for money, and of course my father never gave me that tremendous amount of money for an allowance, so the extra money in winning in pool helped a lot. And that's what I had the most fun when I learned how to play pool and became good at it, and it became my hobby. I spent a lot of time practicing and playing and winning.
Can you still play pool today?
Yeah, but of course not as well as I used to. You have to really do it frequently in order to retain, you know, the ability to be a good pool player.
I have to play you in pool one day. So You like to play pool. You mentioned that, but I know that you also used to like to sing and perform too a little bit and play baseball. So can you tell me about that? Did you ever dream as a kid that you would be a performer or a pro baseball player?
Yeah, I wanted to be both. It had to be one or the other, as a job. But to start out with, I wanted to be a performer because I didn't quite know all the ins and outs of my favorite sport, which was baseball. But I wanted to be a performer, and I there was just something about watching somebody on a movie screen acting and coming across as being real. There was just something about it that I was attracted to. And I liked the idea of getting up in front of people, a lot of people, and performing and doing singing, acting, whatever it took. So primarily I was interested in that. As far as being a pro ball player, I became interested in baseball. I became good at baseball. I was good at remembering the names of all the players, their numbers, their batting averages, and there was a tree that I used to climb up on, and when my friends would be playing baseball, I used to participate with them, but every once in a while I'd get up on the tree and I'd announce, like a regular radio announcer, I would announce what was going on in the game. And that was very, very satisfying for me. So actually, I wanted to do both.
What kinds of things did you perform?
Well, I evidently developed somewhat of a fairly decent voice. And I wanted to sing primarily. And I also wanted to act. But between the two, singing probably was my favorite.
What did you like to sing the most?
Well, I like to sing the old-time songs, you know, that were around when I was growing up. They could have been love songs, they could have been funny songs, ballads, whatever you might think of. Singing was really what I aspired to do.
Any particular people or singers that you liked?
Well, yeah, I liked all of the singers that were popular at the time. To be honest with you, my memory isn't that great, so I can't remember some of the names, but I do remember one singer in particular who was a performer, a singer. His name was Al Jolson. I went to see the movie of his life, and somehow or another, I just was so impressed by his upbringing and his ambition to be a singer. And then he turned out to be a terrific singer, and he turned out to be the world's greatest entertainer. And what I did is I would buy his records and play them, and then pantomime, lip sing, because I loved him so much, and I loved his music, and I loved the way, the movements that he went through, and the way he performed. And to this day, I still feel the same way about him. He, of course, passed away a long time ago, but I remembered all of his songs. I used to sing them by memory, and I entertained in high school and for some sorority that were put on by the girls. They'd have a party, they'd ask me to do it. I did it the first time in public when I was in high school. I got up and I performed in front of all the mothers of the students. They had a what they call a Mother's Day tea, and they were looking for somebody to get up and entertain. And I was doing the Jolson thing, and so I knew how to do it, so that's what I did. I had a standing O, and they asked for more, and I sang. I was only supposed to sing one song, and it was the pantomime, by the way. I had somebody up in a booth, and they were playing the songs, and I would sing the words, and people Some people actually thought that it was me singing.
Why didn't you really sing? Because you have a good voice.
Well, like I said, I wanted to perform. That was one of my ambitions. And singing was really my favorite. And I don't know why, I just never kept it up. I had to go to work and get a job and make some money and so on and so forth. So it kind of just wandered away from me, if you will.
I just was wondering why you lip-synced instead of really singing.
That's oh, because he had a wonderful voice, and I knew that I couldn't duplicate that. And I thought that by pantomiming, I knew all of his movements, so that the performance really came across as though I was doing the singing. And I just wanted people to know, hey, I could sing like Al Jolson. It was that kind of thinking that got me going a little bit while I was up performing. And I was very satisfied with what I had chosen and the reaction of the audiences. So that's what prompted me to really want to do that for a living.
Okay. So, and by the way, Dad, what was the date and the year that you were born?
I was born June 21st, 1932. That happened to be the first day of summer.
Yeah, I always think of you on the first day of summer. So
I hope you think of me more often than
I do. In that time, did kids get an allowance from their parents? Did Grandpa Nate give you an allowance?
Well, not right away. It took a little while for him to come around, but the allowance was very minute, if you will. He started me off with $3 a week. Now, on $3 a week, at that, I was a teenager when he started the allowance. I smoked, and I played pool, and I went to the movies on Friday night, which was the night for the Terminal Theater up on Lawrence Avenue in Albany Park. All the kids used to go there. And finally, I started dating girls, and I approached my father, and I said to him, Dad, I'm going out tonight with a very, very nice girl, but I'm not going to be able to do much on $3. So could I have a raise? He said no. And I said, well, then I'm going to have to cancel the date. So I finally talked him into it, and I got the $5. And for some reason, because my dad normally, when it came to money, wasn't what I would say generous, he kept me at the $5 and never went back to the $3. So I appreciated that, and of course I had a couple of extra dollars in my pocket to, you know, to do what I wanted to do. So that's that story.
What do you think is the most important lesson that you've learned in life?
To treat others as the way you would want to be treated, and to respect people, be kind, and help people. And do whatever you can, you know, to make them happy and make them happier in their lives. I'm a giving person, and I just give my all when it comes to being nice to people.
So I know that one of the things you love doing to have some fun and goof around is you like speaking in a Jewish accent, you know, like you're old aunts and uncles and even your parents, you know, from the old country and using Yiddish words. And it seems like it's rare these days. You don't hear that a lot. So
no, you don't. You don't, because it's kind of died. But being the age that I am, I retained, I learned how to speak Yiddish because my grandparents lived with us and they spoke nothing but Yiddish. And of course, I picked it up from them, learned it, learned to speak it, and learned to understand it. And it's one of the favorite things I do in my life, because I can speak fluently with a Jewish accent. And that was another way of my entertaining when I was asked to appear on certain occasions. And I just love the way they talked when they talked English. I love the way they, like, for example, my grandfather, when I say to him, "Zadie, how much did that cost?" And he'd say to me, "Oh yeah, Zoyfield," which means plenty. In other words, if he would have said English, and I'd asked him, you know, a question about how much this was, how much that was, he would say, in English, he would say, "Oy, plenty." So I just got a kick out of it, and to this day, my brother Ira and my brother Howard, both are good with English, Jewish dialects. And so what can I say? I mean, that's what I like. And I still do. And I can't stop talking like I was born in the old country.
Is that one of the things you miss most about, you know, your aunts, uncles?
Oh, yes, parents? Yes, because that's where it originated from them. And I had very, very good aunts and uncles, and I missed them terribly when they passed on. And I still think about them. And maybe that's why I speak with the Jewish accent sometimes, you know, automatically. Sometimes I'll even answer with the accent, not even thinking, because I'm so used to using it and knowing it that it automatically comes out. Like right now, my daughter is giving me a interview, and I just love it. It is so wonderful. Don't ask.
Oh, that is funny. Oh my God, Dad. So what were some of your favorite fads and things like that from the 1940s and 50s, like some of the hairstyles and clothes?
Well, the hairstyle, and I had plenty of hair then. I was probably 3 inches taller when I was growing up because the hair was... I used to have what they call a pompadour. And as far as fads go, one of the fads was if you smoked, you always had an unlit cigarette in your ear. That was one of the fads at that time. And as far as the clothes go, we used to wear what they call peg pants, you know, down at the bottom by your shoes. They were pegged. They weren't straight cut. The colors were sort of a fad. Royal blue is my favorite color. And royal blue peg pants, I mean, there could be nothing nicer, nothing more attractive. And of course, I would wear a shirt that matched the pants. And you know, that's what we used to do. As far as fads go, that's what it was.
So nobody in our family yet. You don't have any great-grandchildren yet. I mean, you might soon.
Right.
Who knows?
Oh, yeah, I hope so.
What kind of advice would you, if you had great-grandchildren, what kind of advice would you give them?
All right. I would say to them, if you guys would be exactly the way my kids turned out, I couldn't be happier. And I think that would be the thing that I would say to my great grandchildren. Be like your parents, be like your friends, just treat everybody with kindness and with respect. And you'll be very, very successful in life. And most importantly, if you be that way, you'd be very, very well liked by other people, and they would respond in kind.
Well, Dad, I really enjoyed this interview. I learned a lot about you that I didn't know. It's been fun.
Well, I ain't gonna tell you everything.
You just can't stop with that Jewish accent.
No, I can't. What am I going to do? I'm Jewish, and I love it. So anyway, thanks, Debbie. Thanks a lot. I had a very good time. And when I grew up, I wanted to be a pharmacist.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks, Dad.
That's what my grandfather used to say. And I'd say, Zadie, what does he do for